Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, the only moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casinos, the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Joining us now is T.D. Teron Davenport, who always joins us on Mondays at 1 o'clock. T.D., appreciate you for joining us. Last week on Thursday night, it was a tough loss. It's a tough one to swallow because it felt like that was one that the Titans could have gotten. And it's a loss that felt a little bit easier to swallow given Will Levis and his performance. But the most disappointing thing to me, TD, was the defense. Over the last couple of weeks, I mean, they let Zach Moss run all over them. They let the Pittsburgh Steelers run all over them. What's been going on with the defensive front that we thought was had the makings of being elite going into this season?
Well, there's a lot of things that you could put to it. And one of the things that Mike Vrabel said, and it even applies to them not getting any sacks or only two QB hits, is guys aren't winning their matchups up front. So that's something that's not happening. You're not seeing that penetration in the backfield like you did earlier in the year, and that's making the running back reroute. So, I mean, there's a lot of things. You look at not setting the edge, and I think Mike Vrabel pointed it out pretty well. You know, there was one run where I think it was Jaylen Warren to the left. Rashad Weaver didn't set the edge, and Tremaine Edmonds came in, and he wasn't able to make the tackle, and it probably would have been a different situation if that edge was set. And that's always the basic formula that they'll tell you when the running attack is going well for the opposite team. They're not setting the edge, they're not creating a wall, and they're not swarming and tackling.
What was your evaluation of Will Levis on Thursday night?
I think all things being considered, just the way he's able to get the ball out of his hands, even with people around him, is really good. He had some outstanding throws. That one to Kyle Phillips on the deep outbreaking route was a really good one. He had a good one to Westbrook Ikhine too. And then you look at the way he fired that one to DeAndre Hopkins, you know, right after Renegade. They played the Renegade song and that stadium was going crazy. And that was all just put out, you know, this thing. It was like a fire extinguisher, you know, it was put out with that one throw that he made. So I was impressed with it. I mean, obviously there's some that you know, he might have been able to get a little bit better placement on. I don't hold the interception against him. It's 11 seconds left. You're trying to make a play, and that's really what it comes down to.
Hard not to be impressed. Wasn't perfect. Nope. Didn't expect him to be, but it's hard not to be impressed with what we've seen from Will Levis through 2 weeks. What did you make of the play calling on Thursday night? Specifically, that second-to-last possession of the second half when it's about, what, 3.5 minutes left. The end around to Treylon Burks, then you run it up the middle with Derrick Henry and then running it with Tajay Spears, and then the 4th-and-4 throw to Treylon Burks that ultimately got him knocked out of the game. I was very confused about those decisions by Tim Kelly.
Yeah, I didn't like that series. I understand what they were trying to do. I just think, you know, you get into a 2nd-and-5, a 2nd-and-4 type of situation after that end around to Burks. I think that's when you already know your quarterback, he's playing well. So give him an opportunity to get you that first down and to make the play. They gave the ball to Derrick Henry, and it's funny because in these types of situations, if Derrick Henry doesn't get a touch, everybody's like, oh, how did you not give the ball to Derrick Henry? Because that's exactly what was going on in the Saints game, you know. So it's either way, you're going to lose in the court of public opinion. But the play to Tajay Spears on third down, I had an issue with that. The fourth down call, I don't have an issue with that because, frankly, and I put this on Twitter, you know, with the dots and everything, and you got, you know, that 3-by-1, Burks on the backside, and I get it. You know, you have your alert. There's one-on-one there. You trust Treylon Burks to win, but you just need 4 yards, right? And you look at that, and you know how they were bringing the safety down to double DeAndre Hopkins when he's in the slot. Hopkins ran that slant, Okonkwo wearing the clear out, and Kyle Phillips was number one on that side, and he was open very quickly. And as opposed to going deep like that, get the ball to Phillips, get the first down, live to see another series.
But on plays like that, I don't blame it on the and you really try not to put blame anywhere because, you know, right. Will Levis sees what he sees. If I'm a quarterback and I got one-on-one, you know, coverage with a big wide receiver who I have faith in, then, you know, 9 times out of 10, that's where the guys are going. They're going to their big play guy. Where's the one-on-one matchup? I want to find it. There it is. Let me exploit it. It just didn't work. So I don't fault necessarily the play calling. It's just a rookie quarterback that, you know, that sees what he sees and he's trusting what he sees. And instead of just getting the 4 yards, he wants to, you know, get the play down the field because he believes right now what I see is one-on-one matchup. And every coordinator will tell you, if you got a one-on-one matchup out there with a guy that you feel has the ability to go get the ball, then that's where you go, regardless of what they're doing anywhere else, because you knew they were going to double D-Hop. But you're right. Kyle Phillips was open. But I think, like a rookie quarterback, he had already made up his mind where he was going. I'm not going to fault him for that. You know, the play didn't work out the way they you know, wanted to work out, and you kind of move on from there.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And the reason why I explained it like that is I wanted to make it clear that I didn't believe the play call was bad on that fourth down. Mm-hmm. You're right. You know, you have that alert that you don't see the safety over top. You got Burks 1-on-1, and he's already shown, Levis, that is, he's already shown that he's going to bomb it out, you know, and he's done that to Burks specifically multiple times. So it was there. It's just one of those things where I wonder, you know, how you go about coaching that up. Like, do you tell him to dial it back? You know what I mean? And it's hard not to because – he's been successful on that. So that's a tough balance that I would hate to have as a position coach.
Yeah, you don't want to ever scare him away from making that throw again.
Exactly.
But it is hard to, like, how do you tell a young quarterback, hey, we only need 4 yards. So take what the defense gives you as opposed of seeing that guy one-on-one, because under any other circumstances, that's where you're going. Now, let's get back to the defense, TD. And, you know, we talked about this earlier on in the show. I don't think it's so much of the front seven, you know, because when you see situations like, you know, Pittsburgh rushing for over 130 yards or what Indianapolis was able to do in their run game, Baltimore, I'm specifically now just looking at what I saw in the Pittsburgh game. I don't think they out-physicaled that front seven. I think they out-techniqued them. And that's far different from just pushing those guys around, because I'm not going to sit here after watching the film and say, yeah, Big Jeff got pushed around. He didn't. How can you push a guy like that around? Big Tier Turner, oh, he got pushed around. Yeah, maybe one or two plays, and maybe he was going that way, and they just pushed him further along. But what I saw from the Pittsburgh Steelers is that their technique is what won them those matchups, and not necessarily, oh, we just pushed this team around.
Yeah, and it's something that is surprising because – Terrell Williams is such a sound coach up front, you know, so it is surprising. And that's exactly, you talk about technique, right? Setting the edge, that's a part of run defense. And it didn't happen on that one play, and it was like a 20-something-yard game for Jalen Warren. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, that's basically what happened. You look at these guys, you know, like you said, you're not going to see Simmons get pushed around and moved or anything like that. Azeez Al-Shaair had a pretty good game, you know, so I'm not going to put it on the linebackers all the way either. They just got to get better. And that late drive, that scoring one, you know, giving up that long run, and then also, like, can't hide the 30-yard or so gain that Deontay Johnson had to put them in a better position.
Now, TD, why do you think Vrabel hasn't named a starting quarterback? You know, why do you think he's going to wait? Do you think it has more to do with just the respect for Ryan Tannehill? Or do you think there's really discussion within that building about, well, maybe let's go back to Ryan Tannehill?
I think there's a mixture of three things. The two things you mentioned, and then also you add in just the strategy side of things. We know that Mike Vrabel does not like to reveal much, you know, so I would imagine, well, hopefully, you know, he names a starter tomorrow, but I would imagine nothing really becomes concrete until later in the week. And that's something that I think is going to be the case. And it's just interesting. And I want to ask him about it, but I'm a little hesitant too, because he never likes to address questions dealing with his playing days. But I'm just really curious, because he'd been there and done that, right? He was there in New England when Drew Bledsoe got hurt and Tom Brady came in. And I'm just curious if he's weighing on any his, not his decision, but just drawing a little bit of judgment just from that situation back then, you know, that experience that he went through.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Teron Davenport is with us. Teron, we now get the news on Nicholas Petit-Frere, and unfortunately it looks like this is spinning away towards sort of a lost season for him for all these different reasons. But now it really leaves you in a bind from where you go offensive line-wise. What do you think is the best strategy that they could try given the circumstances? It's hard because we don't have all the information because all these guys are nicked up. But, man, this looks bleak.
Yeah, well, the one guy that is healthy is Dylan Raidens. So, I would put him at left tackle. It's just the Andre Dillard experience is just something that I don't care who's back there at quarterback, I wouldn't want to be put involved with, right? So you got that Dillard at left tackle. Hubbard, it's been a good amount of time now, you know, for that concussion. I would see if that's something that he could come back from. And if he can, then you put him at right tackle. That's the way I would do it.
So that hopefully could stabilize where they're going from here. So where do you see Petit-Frere going forward? It's not like his contract's up, but man, it's just a bummer in the whole big picture. You were hoping you had a piece there. Can you see him? Do we have any sense of whether he could be available before the year's over?
No, with that shoulder surgery, I don't think he's going to be back. Because, you know, you have the surgery, then you got to rehab, then you got to regain the strength, and it's just a whole lot. And I don't know the extent, like, you know, rotator cuff, what it is. And the thing is, though, just a surgery on your shoulder, that's not something I would imagine that he would come back from.
What are your thoughts on what we saw from around the division yesterday? Obviously, the Jags didn't play, but that performance by C.J. Stroud was eye-opening. And, of course, he did it against the next opponent for the Titans. But it has to be noteworthy to Rand Carthon and all the plans of the big picture that the Texans and even the Colts, their plans, they look like they're further ahead than most people thought they would be at this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at the Texans, and it's not really eye-opening to me because, you know, Stroud, he's played outstanding football all year for the most part. Yeah, he had a clunker last week against the Panthers, but I mean, this guy, there's, what, 40-some seconds left, took over on his own 25-yard line and just executed that two-minute drill just to perfection. And that's something that you just kind of expect from him because this is what he did in college. And he's just a continuation. As far as the Colts are concerned, I think the big thing that you have to look at, that offense didn't – Gardner Minshew and the crew, like, they didn't play outstanding football. Remember, they got two pick sixes, right? And so – you know, that's 14 points on the board that you know, you got from intercepting Bryce Young. So I think defensively this Colts team is outstanding, and that's just something that has been something they can hang their hats on over the last few years, right? So it's nothing new there. But, yeah, those two teams, I mean, they got big wins, and they got them in two different ways.
All right, TD, I got to know, in an emergency situation, could you kick a 29-yard field goal in a big situation?
No, I'm not doing that, man. Dario Gumbawale, he gives my props. I got to talk to him yesterday on ESPN Radio about that.
Did you really?
Yeah, God. We were able to score an interview there. I did a show with Brandon Jacobs, and we got him, and He said that he got to work on that, you know, a little bit during practice, but it had been established that he was the emergency kicker. He said, but I'm not the backup. I want to make it clear I'm the emergency, not the backup.
Man, I would love to have an emergency kicker like that, man. That was poise. That was ice water in the veins. That was a big kick.
And
that wasn't
timing.
Just like messing around at the end of the game. Hey, let's let this guy kick one. That was game on the line.
Yeah, it made it 33-30 in the fourth quarter.
I said there is nothing more of a Vrabel guy than your running back that can kick field goals. Your special teams contributions. TD Teron Davenport is with us. TD, scary scene for Treylon Burks on Thursday night. And I know that some of these injuries that he sustained over the past couple of years are out of his control. You know, you get hit, a dirty hit in Philadelphia that sits you out with a concussion. Not your fault, but you still aren't available. Again, on Thursday night against the Steelers. That we just haven't seen enough consistency, whether it's on the field or ability to stay on the field from Treylon Burks. What do you think comes next for him and really in this wide receiver room as a whole for the Titans?
Yeah, it's tough, man. You know, to see him be unconscious the way he was on the turf, and to know that that's less than a year after it happened another time, it really makes you think things out. And it was really good just to see him walk out of the locker room afterward, and you know, to hear Mike Vrabel say that he in contact with them, texting, and was on his way to the building on Monday. That's a positive thing. But we know these concussions, man, they're not something to play with. So I don't know that he plays against the Bucks, and it's just a series of misfortune that this young man has encountered. He's still got to keep trying him out there as much as you can. So I think that's his future, and obviously when he's healthy, if they could find a way to get him to be consistent, then they could kind of cash in on that investment that they did. But I tell you, man, you know, you watch college football, and you look at Texas, man. They got a guy, Xavier Worthy, man. He's
so good.
He's a return punch, and he's a vertical stretch. You got that, and then you got Leggett from
South
Carolina. Just a big, sturdy. I mean, this guy's listed like 6'3", 227. And you just see him bouncing off of tackles, and he gets vertical also. I mean, there's some options there, and I think, you know, you're going to have to at some point fill in with that true vertical guy. And if you could get him to double as a returner, Xavier Worthy is a guy that I would definitely go for.
And last one for me, TD. There was a report in the Boston Globe from Ben Volen that said that Vrabel would be Robert Kraft's home run hire if and when they move on from Bill Belichick. And, of course, that is a decision that lies solely in the hands of Amy Adams Strunk, what she wants to do with the future of this organization. Is it worth it? Is Vrabel the guy? But in your opinion, how important is consistency of coaching staffs for the development of a young quarterback?
Well, let me say this, like, you know, a Corvette Stingray would be my home run vehicle if and when I move on from my Camaro. So, you know, that's something I would love to make happen. And just saying that doesn't mean it's going to happen. So I do think we got to get that out of the way. But you're right. A consistent coaching staff is very important. The thing that I wonder, though, is, okay, well, if they continue to lose and not have the ability to stack wins, like lose one, win one, lose one, I wonder if the message starts to get stale, right? Because it's hard to go out there and lose and have that frustration over and over again. So I wonder that. But I think it would be crazy for them to part ways with Mike Vrabel, unless it's four. I mean, you're talking about a couple first-round picks. You definitely have to consider it, but I think the value of consistency is just a complete message. And I remember talking to people when I first got here, and they raved about the positivity and just the different feel, the excitement within the building that Mike Vrabel brought. So I think that's hard to replace.
TD, you are the very best. Appreciate you for stopping by. We'll chat next week.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Take
awesome.
It easy.
Thanks, TD. And in reference to that Boston Globe report, that's the thing. You got to weigh, and it's not an easy decision of what's the value of what we would get in return versus the value that this coach brings to our organization and the consistency that he brings to the organization. But TD brings up a fair point. Sometimes you just need a fresh face. Sometimes the voice and the message just gets stale. That's the decision that Amy Adams Strunk could be faced with. Mm-hmm. Could be. All right, we'll continue to get back into your Titans thoughts, but coming up next, I want to fit in a quick Pred stop because we had a hat trick over the weekend. I want to get Willie's thoughts on that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
Blocker saved by Campbell. One-timer. Carrier tipped wide by Nyquist. Back in front. Campbell covers it up.
In.
Puck still alive on the near left side.
It did everything but go in.
Puck was never frozen. In the front. O'Reilly for the hat trick. Ryan O'Reilly with the hat trick. 5-2 Preds. 11:26 left in the third.
Was that C-May saying, go in, go in?
I think that was Hal.
Gill.
Oh, that was Hal.
Expert analysis from Hal there.
Oh, my goodness.
Go in. For the Predators, finally, kind of get the proverbial monkey off their back, taking down the Edmonton Oilers in regulation 5-2 over the weekend. And you heard it there, a hat trick from Ryan O'Reilly. And I'll go back to over the spring when Barry Trotz made those moves, bringing in Luke Shen, Ryan O'Reilly, the quote-unquote serial winners. And there were so many Predators fans that were so upset and angry and confused at those acquisitions. Because they said, you're moving on from old guys just to pick up more old guys. Like, what are we doing here? We always reminded those fans, hey, it's acquisitions that you're making for culture, whether you get, you know, some production from them, you know, here and there, but it's really just about the young guys. Well, Ryan O'Reilly is giving you the culture aspect of it all, the locker room aspect of it all, and he has been as advertised as a Nashville Predator so far through, you know, a handful of games.
He's been everything they hoped he would be and more. It's unbelievable. Like, I remember that press conference the day after free agency started, when Barry Trotz went through all of the players that he picked up, including Luke Shen and Gus Nyquist. But he went down point by point what makes Ryan O'Reilly a leader and a person he wanted on the team. And it's one thing to say that, but then to see it for, and it's only been 11 games, right? They're just getting started. Got a long way to go.
Right.
But every single thing that they hoped he would be, he's showing you every night. And what a great game he played to sort of set the tone and get a big win. Because, yeah, I don't want to say morale was low, but I think there was some frustration in the first two games of the road trip because they felt like they had played pretty well in some areas and the score wasn't really translating to how they thought they were playing. But when you don't get results, it's easy to lose some confidence. And you know, I think guys like O'Reilly, we had Ryan McDonough on our show, and you could tell what he was trying to do, right? Kind of look at the process. Let's not look at the results right now. Stay with the process, and the results will come. Well, they finally got the results, and it came against a team where, you know, they've had no success to speak of. They did beat them once last year, mm-hmm. right, in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, you know, a lot of the guys that have been on this team for a while, they have had some nightmares against the Oilers. So to get it done like that, even though the Oilers are struggling, that's a big story throughout the league right now. I don't know what's wrong with that team, but they are. That's a big, big deal that they're 2-7-1.
A team that
but
has no business
they can't worry
struggling.
About that, right? I think. Right, but so I think they feel pretty good. So I'm really curious now to see where they go from here, because there's a lot of parity in the league. There's a bunch of teams that are right, you know, with above or below 500 when you throw the overtime losses in there. So there's an enormous pack of teams, especially in the Western Conference. How long can they stay in it, and what direction are they going with some of these young guys?
Now, because we talked about Josi a couple of weeks ago and, you know, him just trying to, you know, get used to sort of playing this new way, but it seems like the last five games he sort of seemed to settle. He's settling in. to this role. 2 goals, 3 assists, I think 5 points in the last 5 games. Do you see it getting better for him moving forward?
I do. I think he's getting more comfortable in the system, and I would put Forsberg in that category as well. Forsberg had a big game alongside of O'Reilly. They each had 4 points. Forsberg had a huge goal because the Oilers scored the first goal of the game, and it was on a power play, and you're sitting there going, oh, boy, here we go again. The Oilers power play, you know, start up the band. The crowd's getting excited. And Forsberg came right back and scored a goal, which was huge for him because we've been talking about his situation. He and Roman Josi getting a lot of shots, but the puck hasn't gone in for whatever reason. But Forsberg, to get that goal, sort of set the tone to put the Predators back in the right spot there. And so I think both of them. I think Forsberg's really enjoying playing with O'Reilly. I think O'Reilly is sort of bringing out the best in Philip Forsberg. And I think having an engaged and excited Philip Forsberg is a big thing. And, you know, again, not to make it too much about, you know, who Ryan O'Reilly and Gus Nyquist replaced, but I do think Philip Forsberg could sort of be pulled into a negative flow at times when things weren't going well with, you know, last year, for example, right? And he would rise and fall with the group. And so I'm hoping that, you know, the pull of a Ryan O'Reilly is going to mean big things. So Forsberg now is over a point per game. He's only got 2 goals, but he's got 12 points. So that's a good sign. And now I think you're seeing Josi get a little bit more used to how he's going to be used in this system. For example, he's in a different spot on the power play. I think he's now learning what he can do in that spot. So I think the points are going to come from them. So any equation where the Predators are right in the playoff race over the long term would include, you know, good productive seasons from Josi and Forsberg. And so there's some good signs that's happening after a bit of a slow start for both of them.
I think it has to. And I think that was kind of the conversation that we were having at least preseason and then throughout the season so far is you need your core players, your veterans, to pick up a majority of the work and have those young guys supplement it. And then at some point in the season, you would love to see the young guys develop and get to a point where they can start to take a little bit off of the plates of the veterans. But, Willie, you mentioned, you know, you got the results. And you got that against Edmonton. And it was a big win. And it feels like a little bit of an actual victory, yes, and also a moral victory even more. Just finally knocking them off in regulation, something that this team hasn't done. Did I hear correctly? In 5 years? Haven't beaten Edmonton in regulation in five years?
Yeah, it's a little deceiving because there was a year that they didn't play. Because
that's
remember
true.
The one year.
In 2020.
Year, so it's more, I guess it's the better part of four seasons. So there was Edmonton was 10-0-2 against the Predators in the last 12 meetings. So that does date back, I think. It probably is. I haven't done the math, but and you know, Leon Draisaitl had scored the most goals against the Predators of any player against any team over that period of time. And that's considering they didn't play each other for a whole year. Mm-hmm. That's saying something. That's crazy.
It is crazy
to think about. And they held him off the scoreboard, which was huge. No points for Draisaitl on Saturday. Only 1 assist for McDavid. And a lot had to do with O'Reilly. O'Reilly beat McDavid in the faceoff circle a bunch. And they were going head-to-head a lot. So they did a really good job on the defensive side of things, all things considered. It's hard to contain those guys, as we know, and they did. But I think the Predators feel like their record should be better than it is. They're 5-6, and you're thinking, well, that's not that great. You know, but I feel like looking forward with the process, I think they think that if they get the good goaltending, which is the major issue with the Oilers, right? The Oilers, you know, even if they get it cranking offensively, they got major questions in goal. The Predators don't have those questions. And I think they feel like their goaltenders are going to keep them in games. And if they can keep going with the process, they feel like they can do better than 5-6. They've also played, I think, a pretty difficult schedule, all things considered, in these first 11 games. So there's signs, but it's going to come back to the thing that we all knew was going to be the case. Where will this young group of players take them? Can they keep growing? Some are, they're gonna have some ups and downs, but in the big picture, are they moving in the right direction collectively?
And that's kind of my big question is, you know, you mentioned the results, and you need the results. But now it's the consistency. Because it's still early, and that's one thing we talked about with Elliott Friedman of it's still early, but also when does it become not early? You get seven games until Thanksgiving, and it is not the end-all, be-all of if you are out of a playoff spot by Thanksgiving that you won't make the playoffs. You're only a third of the way through the season. But the stats show if you are in a playoff spot by Thanksgiving, you got a pretty good chance of being there in the spring. And look, the expectation going into this season was not playoffs or bust. It was get in, great, and see what you can do and what great playoff experience this will be for the young guys. So it's not the end-all, be-all, but you'd like to see him get into the playoffs. So the consistency is really the key for me here because you win a couple, you lose a couple, you win one, you lose a couple, you win a couple, you lose one. Got to start finding some consistency here, especially within the next seven games until Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you want to be hanging around. The big thing about that Thanksgiving stat, in my mind, it's one thing if you're 1 point out or 2 points out.
Right.
You know, it's not like you say, well, you know, you're not in the playoffs at Thanksgiving. That's it. But if you bury yourself and you have a lot of ground to make up, especially where the Predators are, it's hard to see them going on that kind of run. But if they can, you know, put some consistent hockey together and hang around, I think the way it's shaping up, there are a lot of teams that are going to be hovering around the same area. Not great, not bad. They're going to have to get the most out of what they do have, right? They're not a ton of powerhouses. We know Vegas is a powerhouse. We think that the Avalanche are still some form of a powerhouse, even though they look a little different. Their depth is not quite the same as it was. But after that, you know, it's pretty wide open. There are going to be two or three spots in the playoff race. I think the third place spot in the Central, which is an automatic bid to the playoffs, that looks like it's going to be maybe wide open, like we thought. And the two wild cards, I think, are probably going to be pretty wide open when it comes down to it. So could you be in that mix? I think that's the best case scenario. So you're right. The next seven games is the next sort of stage. They got some home games coming up after these next two road games. They want to finish this road trip strong against two of those middling teams, right? The Flames and the Jets are two teams ultimately that you're probably going to measure yourself up against in the big picture. So how do they stack up?
Speaking of the Predators, tomorrow it is your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click. If you correctly guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the Preds game tomorrow night, then you will win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Participate with Robbie and Rex Road tomorrow morning at 8:45 a.m. Pick to Click brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. List your home with TJ to get your home seen, heard, and sold. We'll wrap it up with your phones coming up next. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025-1063 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. This week's Nashville's Best Deal is West Coast Taco Shop. Try some of the best California-style Mexican food at West Coast Taco Shop on Murfreesboro Pike in Nashville. Their burritos, nachos, quesadillas, and variety of tacos are delicious. So go to thegamenashville.com/deals to get half off of a $20 gift card while supplies last. The people have some thoughts, so unless we have thoughts,
let's go.
Let's hear from the people.
Let's get to the phones. Phone lines driven up by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you want to get in on the action. Kevin is on the line with a thought on the Predators. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to get your guys' opinion. Who do you think is going to round out the top line? Are they going to continue to give Nyquist that opportunity, or do you think Parsonen is going to come back and be better on that top line? If we had a third person really turning on that top line, that would be awesome. Just wanted to get your opinion on that, and I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Thanks for your call, Kevin.
I think that's a really good question that Kevin is asking, because in my mind, in a perfect world, Forsberg and O'Reilly would have somebody like Parsonen or Tomasino, one of the young guys rounding out that line would be ideal. And then you could use Nyquist as a guy who could support a lower line. Is Gus Nyquist a first-line player? No, he's not. He's on the first line right now because it's giving them a really good veteran presence, and the three of those guys are playing really well. But that's not the ideal role for Nyquist. Just like down the road, next year and the year after, I don't think you want Ryan O'Reilly to be your number one center at that stage of his career. Hopefully he can kind of mature into a Mike Fisher type of second line or third line center on a really loaded team. That's the big picture plan that you hope that you can get to. So I'm kind of leaning. I would love to see Parsonen, especially when Cody Glass comes back. That's part of the answer to the question is Cody Glass close to coming back? I think that he might be. There's two more games on this road trip. I would hope at the very least when they get back home, he'll be very close to coming back, if not before that. His hometown is Winnipeg, so keep that in mind. He's probably very motivated to get back up to Winnipeg to play. So we'll see. But I would love to see Parsonen go up and grab that top-line spot back. To me, that gives you the best balance.
It's a great opportunity. Tom in Nashville.
Yeah, but Parsonen's a great example of the ups and downs, right? Parsonen started fast, then hit a skid, went into a slump. His last couple of games have looked better. And I think he's coming out of that little first mini slump where they had to really have some discussion with him saying, look, you know, to make it happen in this league, it's got to be every night and you got to do these things. So hopefully there's some lessons to be learned and you come out of it stronger.
And look, if you didn't expect some inconsistencies from this young team, then maybe your expectations were a little bit too high. I think inconsistency is the byproduct of having young and inexperienced players kind of trying to find their role. Now, the key here is which of these young guys can separate themselves and find that consistency and help this team win games now that we're getting to a point where where the standings do matter. It's still early. I understand that. Yep. Only 11 games in. But it starts to get late fast in the National Hockey League.
Yep. And, I think a lot of people would have said, wow, Tomasino's been scratched for 5 games. He's only got 1 point. What's going on with him? But I think this is part of the peaks and valleys of, you know, the growth of a player. And hopefully he'll come around, right? That's another guy that they're hoping is a big part of the future. Fagimo and Foodie, two guys they took waiver wire shots on, two guys that were pretty high prospects at one point. You know, what do they have there? Right now, it's a mixed bag of what you're getting there. But hopefully through all of these guys, you get somebody to emerge and go grab those spots.
Tom in Nashville, Texan, says, never heard any uprising of signing a winner like Ryan O'Reilly. Any true hockey fan knows he's a pro's pro. You guys back me up here. There was some pushback when those signings were made.
Oh, yeah. And I think the pushback was this. Look, they basically paid money, big money, and it's really going to hit more next year. And fortunately for the Predators, this is part of the plan. The cap is going to go up next year, so you could shoulder it more. But they paid big money for Duchesne and Johansson to go away. They're paying big money, and they got nothing back, right? So a lot of people were saying, okay, youth movement. And then they signed a couple of veterans like Nyquist and O'Reilly. And I think that's where people were a little confused, right on the surface.
Right.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think people were confused about the direction. But he goes on to say that Luke Shen was a bad signing. Are you willing to say that yet, Willie?
He's only played one game. So how do we know he's a bad signing? How do we know? The guy got hurt in the second practice after the game. So I don't know. We'll see. If Shen can find his way back in, I think they know that Shen has a value in a locker room that's similar to Nyquist, similar to O'Reilly. That's the idea. He's going to have to find his way because, you know, this is one of those things that it's hard to predict. Like Dante Fabro was starting the season not knowing exactly where he fit. But now, after that injury, he's come in. He's played pretty well. You know, he's fighting for a contract. He's fighting for the rest of his career, whether it's in Nashville or somewhere else. Same thing with Carrier, who I think has played pretty well. But that's something to watch for. And you've got a Tyson Barrie, who is in the last year of his contract. So there's a lot to shake out, I would say, with Shen. And so we're just getting started on this marathon, right? It's a long season. You played 11 out of 82 games. So there's a lot of chapters that need to be written.
Another Texture Texan says the Preds defense is stacked. So do you see any moves? With Shen coming back, what do you think happens? We asked Elliot Friedman this, and he said he hadn't been hearing about any grumblings of any potential moves coming down the pipe.
Yeah, they have good depth. And that's where Mark Delgazzo was a good story, right? Because he beat out some guys that we saw play last year, like Kevin Gravel and Jake Livingstone at the end of the season, and Spencer Stastny, who looked good at the end of last season. So that's another guy that looks like he's at least NHL quality. We'll see where his career goes. But he did a nice job filling in for Ryan McDonagh on Saturday. So, yes, they have depth there. The one that I think is going to be an interesting one to watch, because his contract's up at the end of the year, is Tyson Barry. You know, he's also a guy that has really good leadership qualities. He's got a great personality, really fun sense of humor, has good skill, has a lot to offer. I can also see a contending team saying, boy, we'd love to have Tyson Barry as a rental. And these are options that you'll be looking at in the coming days. But I think it's a good question to look at is, if they can get everybody healthy, you know, where does a Shen fit in? He's still weeks away from coming back, though. Keep that in mind. He's still a ways.
That's going to do it for us today. We will be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman and Company. What's up next?
Be love and love on your people. Peace. Alcohol, so finish your whiskey or beer.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.